Hey, it's me, Lars Larson. Thanks for checking out my podcast, and be sure to tell a friend about the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Tuesday, and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you. In Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, this program for 21 years has supplied honestly provocative talk. And there's a lot to talk about here in the region, but I wanted to start with a national topic today. And here's why. Because it is about as provocative as it gets. Did one of America's top U.S. military generals commit treason against the president? Now, in this case, I'm not talking about Joe Biden. He barely knows where he is. He admits that he forgets he's president from time to time. He even thought that he was going to go to work for a Northwest wood products company at the very beginning of his career, or so he claims, but I'll get to that a bit later. But did one of America's top generals commit treason against the president of the United States? The question's raised today because in about a week, Bob Woodward, and I've got my own opinions about Bob Woodward. He is famous for his role in Woodward and Bernstein, the two reporters who were fed the story about what was going on in the Nixon White House during the Watergate scandal. Woodward comes out with interesting books from time to time, usually with some pretty crazy stuff in them. But this one has gone crazier than you can imagine. The book is actually going to hit about a week from now. And as I said, I'm not necessarily an admirer of Bob Woodward, but I understand that when he comes out with something, people tend to pay attention. Well, this one would definitely make you pay attention. Mark Milley, one of America's top generals still. You might remember he played kind of a strange role in our exit from Afghanistan in that he was negotiating with a terrorist organization, the Taliban. But I want you to consider this. Mark Milley has told Bob Woodward that in the last days of Donald Trump's presidency in January of this year, that he decided that Trump could no longer be trusted with America's nuclear weapons. Now, you say, hold on a second. Don't the American people elect a president, and didn't they elect Donald Trump? And the answer to that is yes. And doesn't the Constitution make the president of the United States the commander-in-chief of the United States military? That is, for right or wrong, the U.S. military answers to a civilian commander, not to a military commander. Now, over the years, I've had people say to me, wouldn't it be great if we made every president be required to have served in the military? And I say, no, it's not great. I think that it's terrific that this country has a volunteer military these days and for the last few decades, and that it answers to a civilian commander-in-chief. In this case, it sounds like, according to this new book called Peril, that is from Bob Woodward, again, it's going to be released in about a week. I'm not trying to pimp the book, understand that. I'm just saying it says something in it that I found absolutely outrageous. And I'm kind of surprised that most of the news is not leading with this right now. Because here's the way it's described. General Mark Milley took top secret action to limit Donald Trump from ordering a dangerous military strike or even launching nuclear weapons. Now, I understand CNN and the mainstream press love to bash on Trump. They bashed on him the whole time he was a candidate. They bashed on him for four solid years as he was president of the United States, and they're still bashing on him today. But to suggest that Donald Trump was so untrustworthy that a member of the U.S. military would do something that I consider treason, and in fact, that's what I'm going to ask you in the Twitter poll today. Did this general commit treason by temporarily seizing control of America's nuclear weapons? Now, if you say, Lars, you're going way too far with this. He didn't actually take control of the weapons. Yes, as a matter of fact, he did. Let me read from CNN's coverage of the release of this book that they say, we obtained an early copy of it. I have a feeling they were given an early copy of it by the publisher for Bob Woodward. Bob Costa from the Washington Post was also involved in writing this book. So Woodward and Costa say that General Milley, who was shaken by the events of January the 6th, and we're still asking questions about January the 6th because it was not an insurrection. It was not an attempt to take over the U.S. government. That's not just my conclusion. That's the conclusion of the Biden Department of Justice and FBI, who say Donald Trump did not inspire the events of January 6th and the riot on Capitol Hill. He didn't incite that riot. He didn't plan that riot. And there's no sign They found scant evidence to suggest that it was an attempt to take over the U.S. government. But they say that Milley was deeply shaken by the assault on January 6th, and he was, quote, certain that Donald Trump had gone into a serious mental decline in the aftermath of the election, and Trump now was all but manic, screaming at officials and constructing his own alternate reality about endless election conspiracies. It sounds to me like General Milley had his own conspiracy theories going. Apparently, General Milley wasn't familiar with a part of the U.S. Constitution that says the United States military is under the command of the elected president of the United States. You know, I remember when I was a kid, we'd see all kinds of movies and books. I watched a few of them. I read a few of them. The craziest one, of course, is Dr. Strangelove, where they talk about the idea that a group of mad majors might just take over, you know, and decide to launch nuclear weapons against, in those days, Russia. And we said, oh, could that ever happen? Could the military actually seize control of nuclear weapons? Well, according to this book by Woodward and Costa, General Mark Milley did exactly that. He held a secret meeting in his Pentagon office 2 days after January the 6th, on the 8th of January this year, and it says to review the process for military action, including launching nuclear weapons. Speaking to senior military officials in charge of the National Military Command, Milley instructed them not to take orders from anyone unless he was involved. Quote, no matter what you are told, you do the procedure, you do the process, and I'm part of that procedure. Hold on a second. If I understand the Constitution right, if I understand the rules right, the President of the United States has command of the U.S. military, not General Milley, not even the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The United States military is commanded by the President of the United States. It sounds to me, in that meeting, Mark Milley seized control and said, don't take orders from anybody except me. I have to, in other words, he was giving himself veto power over the President of the United States. Now, I might have missed something in all the classes and all the books I've read about the U.S. Constitution. I might have missed the part where they said the President of the United States is commander in chief unless one of his top generals decides to take command. And in that case, the general has veto power over the President of the United States. If somebody else has a better copy of the Constitution, maybe you can wise me up about that and tell me, what's the part I missed where the United States military or a general within the military can simply say, don't listen to the president. He's crazy. He's about to launch a nuclear war. Do you know that Mark Milley even told Woodward that he called up the Chinese communists 2 days after the riot on Capitol Hill, the one that Democrats insisted on calling an insurrection, even though, as I said, the Biden FBI says it was not an insurrection. And he told the Chi-Coms, don't worry, I've got control here. Kind of reminds you of Al Haig back in the day. In any case, I think it's treason. You can vote in our Twitter poll. Coming up, did Joe Biden actually get his first job offer from a Northwest Wood Products company? We'll get into that craziness coming up next.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
I realize that a lot of folks actually expect politicians to lie, and they simply accept that that's part of the way that things go on. But I really wish that we would change our expectations and say we're not going to tolerate lies. Do you tolerate friends or family members or coworkers who lie to you over and over and over again? Take Joe Biden, please. We all got a laugh yesterday when the president stopped off in Idaho and claimed he was offered his first ever job by Northwest Wood Products giant Boise Cascade. Well, the company checked its records and said, we've never offered Joe Biden any kind of position. We've never even interviewed the guy. It seems almost pathetic when a man who's risen to the level of the presidency feels the need to pad his resume with claims of a timber job, or claims that he drove an 18-wheeler. He did that too. Or that he came from a coal miner's family. All of them passed Joe Biden claims. But other lies make a difference. For the past few months, Biden and all the people working for him claimed that they didn't have the legal authority to mandate vaccines. And then they went ahead and did it anyway. The Delaware prevaricator campaigned online that he would shut down the virus, which isn't exactly happening either. He claims that he would unify Americans, and he's done exactly the opposite. And it shows in the polls. Most Americans now disapprove of the job that Joe Biden is doing. And folks, he's only 8 months into the job. Barack Obama liked to say elections have consequences. Lying to the American public should have consequences, too. Our question of the day comes in, and I'm going to leave the name off of this one. Lars, it's a young lady, I will say that. It's official. My job has now given us till November 1st to either get the vaccine or be terminated. I'm in home care, and I work as a respiratory therapist. I visit people in their homes. I see about 15 people a month. The rest of the time, I'm able to do my job remotely. I wear all the necessary PPE. I spend about 30 to 40 minutes in their homes. They are not giving us religious exemptions or testing options. I've already had COVID. I feel I don't need this vaccine. Once again, my choice. I've been doing this job since the start of COVID and never once transmitted it to any of my patients. I hear they're offering the postal workers weekly testing. Is this true? And I'll say parenthetically, yes, it is. But then remember, the Postal Workers Union is a labor union. They give a lot of money to Democrats. They get a lot of advantages that the rest of us may not. She goes on to say, they are around many more people than I am. Some of my fellow respiratory and nurse friends will be leaving the profession because of this, and I may be one of them. Any suggestions for a new career or job pass that won't require the vaccine? And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, today's Daily Grill is actually suggested by yet another emailer who alerted me to something going on in the Albany Public Schools here in the Northwest. Lars, please keep my name confidential. I work for the Greater Albany Public Schools. That's known as GAPS, by the way, which I think is sadly ironic. My coworker today was wearing a BLM mask with a full logo. It is policy to not wear political clothing in the school environment. So quietly, I brought this up with the administration. An hour later, they pulled me aside and explained that BLM garb isn't political, it's human rights. And they cited Oregon Department of Education policy, a movement that's responsible for at least 36 innocent deaths, $2 billion in damage, and countless broken laws is considered human rights. I am so sick of hypocritical Oregon. Today's best email, but you can always send more, to talk@LarsLarson.com, is brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest, now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and even a signing bonus. Online at RiverCityUSA.com/careers. Richard writes in from Tigard, Lars, my wife works for Legacy Medical and her staff is on the front lines. They have mandated all employees get the jab or lose their jobs. Whatever happened to you, if you're fully protected with PPE, you shouldn't be at risk of spreading. They've very conveniently gotten amnesia about this, and they seem to be on the same page as Governor Brown in forcing employees to take the jab regardless. Signed, Richard in Tigard. Richard, I appreciate the email, and that is the best email of the day. You can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I want to offer you the opportunity. Somebody just emailed me a moment ago and said, hey, are you going to talk about Rand Paul questioning Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, about Afghanistan? Yes, we're going to get into that as well. But there are some Northwest issues that I want to talk about, too. But first, if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every single day on the Radio Northwest Network at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, there's a young lady, I guess I can still use the term even though Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez doesn't like it, but this young lady's name is Pramila Jayapal. She is a member of Congress and Representative Pramila Jayapal. I've actually got a chance to speak to her, not on the radio show. I invited her to come on the radio show when we ran into each other at the airport in Washington, D.C. a while back. She is one of the leading progressives in the United States Congress. But BuzzFeed did a very interesting story about this Seattle member of Congress. They say that even though Pramila Jayapal is one of the leading progressives, and she's constantly talking about being fair to workers and making sure that women are treated appropriately and all the rest of that, they say, or they report, in November of 2020, Pramila Jayapal laid off two staffers without severance. Two people familiar with the incident told BuzzFeed News. Chris Evans, a spokesperson for Jayapal, says the decision to consolidate the office was made to best utilize the office's resources. Now, I'm all in favor of that, but what happened was the staffers were told were given 6 weeks' notice, but one staff member who was told they were being laid off was invited to reapply for a new job in the office that would actually consolidate the two jobs that were being done away with. The staffer was required to go through the full application process, even though the job was almost identical to the job they had just been laid off from. And then, without advance warning, they found out in an all-hands meeting that they didn't get the job. The staffers who were let go declined to provide comment for the story. The incident upset at least four staffers in the office who talked with BuzzFeed News. It was, they said, one of the many instances in which Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal's interactions with her own employees have run counter to the public persona that she built for herself. Boy, wouldn't I love to talk to the Congresswoman about that. And we had such a great conversation not in her office, but at the airport. She was about to get on the same flight I was taking back to Seattle. And she said, well, you'll have to talk to my staff about it. We have done that since then. So far, no Pramila Jayapal on the show, but she is always welcome. Now, coming up in a moment, we've got to talk about the fact that there is a little bit of mythology being put out there today about poverty in the United States and how the claim is from the Biden administration that poverty actually went down last year during the pandemic, and all because of the actions of government. Now, if you believe that headline, I want to set you straight with a little other information about it. I'll get to that in just a moment, and we'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network. It's the best conversation in talk journalism. And if you'd like to join it, even as a naysayer, you know naysayers always go first at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. And today's Twitter poll, because of what I just mentioned to you about General Mark Milley, today's Twitter poll reads this way. Did one of our top generals commit treason by seizing control of America's nukes? Well, I've had a couple of you email me and say, Lars, it couldn't be treason because he had to give aid and comfort to the enemy in order to do that. Not simply, as Mark Milley claims he did, seize control of America's nuclear weapons and tell his staff at the Pentagon, don't do anything unless I say it's okay. In other words, the Constitution says that the president has control of America's military, which includes the nuclear weapons, not General Milley, not the chairman of the Joint Chiefs or anyone else. In that book, let me add one more thing in. Milley apparently decided it was necessary to call the Chinese, call them and say, by the way, we're not going to attack you. I can promise you that we will not attack you. He went so far as to pledge, this is some of the reporting from the book, that he would alert his counterpart in China in the event of a U.S. attack, stressing the rapport that they had established through a back channel. General Lee, you and I have known each other now for 5 years. If we are going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It is not going to be a surprise. Believing that China could lash out if it felt at risk from an unpredictable and vengeful American president, Milley took action. Yeah, I think illegally and probably unconstitutionally as well. The same day he called the admiral overseeing the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, the military unit responsible for Asia and the Pacific region, and recommended postponing the military exercises, the admiral then complied. Milley also summoned senior officials to review the procedures for launching nuclear weapons, saying the president alone could give the order, but crucially that he, Milley, also had to be involved. Looking each one in the eye, Milley asked the officers to affirm that they had understood the author's right in what he considered an oath. So he gets his officers to say, we will not do it on the president's say-so alone. We will do it only if General Milley, who was not elected by the American public. I know he served in uniform. Ordinarily, I would say thank you for your service in uniform. I want to know whether or not anybody thinks that it's appropriate for any general, any admiral, anybody serving at the Pentagon to say the president isn't calling the shots here, I am. And in a lot of ways, this story fits right in with the story we heard not too long after January the 6th, that on January the 5th, President Trump had said to his liaisons with the Pentagon, I want to have 10,000 National Guard troops on Capitol Hill just in case something happens. And they said, they effectively said, we're not going to do it. I mean, they didn't tell Trump they weren't going to do it. They just didn't comply. Now, I want to suggest something to you, because there's a narrative that's been going on since before January 6th. Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats have wanted to take down Donald Trump any way they could. They still want to take him down, and he's only a private citizen at this point. They're absolutely terrified of the guy. And here's what they did. They impeached him the first time based on a phony charge that he had arranged a quid pro quo with the president of Ukraine. It turns out that wasn't true, and Trump was acquitted in the Senate trial. The second time, when they needed to have, I just want to tell you there's a pattern here. There was a riot on January the 6th. The FBI has now determined Donald Trump did not incite it. And as the FBI, Joe Biden's FBI says, there was scant evidence that it was an attempt to overthrow the United States of America. Now, that didn't stop the Democrats from calling it an insurrection and saying this was an attempted overthrow of the U.S. government and we were all scared for our lives. That was a bunch of hogwash. But I want to tell you something else that I pointed out to you since a few days after January 6th of this year. The FBI came out a couple of days later and they held a news conference. And they said, by the way, we knew something was being cooked up for January 6th. We expected there would be trouble on Capitol Hill. Now, that's interesting enough. But then the FBI, this was at that time, the FBI under Donald Trump, said, we warned the Capitol Police that something was going to happen. And I've been asking the question since then, if the Capitol Police were warned that there was trouble, why didn't they take any kind of special precautions? Well, you have to understand the Capitol Police answer back to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. So you have to imagine one of a couple of different scenarios. One, the FBI calls the Capitol Police and says, by the way, there's going to be trouble on January the 6th. The head of the Capitol Police, who's now been fired, the chief of police for the Capitol Police, answers to Nancy Pelosi. Does he get a warning that there's going to be trouble on January 6th and say, I don't need to bother Madam Pelosi about this. I don't need to tell her that we've been warned by the FBI there might be trouble. Now, if you say, well, Lars, that's awfully hard to imagine that the chief of police of the Capitol Police would not warn his boss that he's been warned by the FBI. Or you could imagine the head of the Capitol Police, the chief, calls Nancy Pelosi and says, Speaker Pelosi, we've been warned by the FBI that there's going to be trouble. And Speaker Pelosi replies, I know. I know what's going to happen. I have some good idea of what's going to happen. Don't take any special precautions at all. Now, I find that one actually plausible. And why do I find it plausible? Because the Capitol Police took no special precautions. They didn't call in extra officers. They didn't tell officers to show up wearing extra gear. They didn't take extra steps to block off sections of the outside, the steps around the Capitol, anticipating an attack on the building. They didn't do any of that. And when Donald Trump the day before said to the Pentagon, we should have 10,000 National Guard on the Capitol grounds just in case something goes sideways. And the Pentagon said, no, we're not going to do that. They actually ignored the commander-in-chief's orders. Now, how would it have changed things? Because you remember, we saw what it looked like to have tens of thousands of National Guard on the Capitol grounds after January 6th. But they weren't there on January the 6th. If they had been there and no riot happened, then if no riot happens, then you can't make the charge of insurrection. You can't falsely claim that, well, a Capitol Police officer was murdered. No Capitol Police officer was murdered during the riot. That turned out not to be true. The only person who was murdered was one young lady, an Air Force veteran, who was murdered by a man on the Capitol Police staff who has now been cleared of any charges. He shot her without apparent reason. She died, and that was that. So You have to ask yourself, if there had been extra steps taken by the Capitol Police, no riot. If there had been 10,000 National Guard to safeguard the Capitol as Donald Trump asked for, then no riot. If you have no riot, then you have no second unconstitutional impeachment. Remember the impeachment where they said, we're going to take a quick vote, no hearings, no evidence, no nothing. We're just going to vote to impeach the president and then put him on trial unconstitutionally after he's left the office of president, which is exactly what happened. But they wouldn't have been able to vote for the second impeachment if there hadn't been a riot. And there wouldn't have been a riot if the Pentagon had said, we're going to put 10,000 National Guard on the Capitol grounds, which they clearly were capable of doing in the days immediately following January 6th, but they decided not to do, even when told by the commander in chief. I mean, at that point, I just want to suggest to you that when the Pentagon is calling its own shots and saying, not only are we not going to consider what the president tells us to do, we're going to actually say we're in charge of the military, of the nuclear weapons and everything else. And we're going to call the Chinese, the communists, and tell them if there's an attack, we will call you up and warn you ahead of time. So what? So the Chinese communists can hit us first? I mean, this gets about as crazy as you can ever imagine. Coming up in just a moment, we've got to talk about Joe Biden's stop here in the Pacific Northwest and when the White House decided to cut the audio on the president himself. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. Our Twitter poll today, did one of our top generals commit treason by seizing control of America's nukes? Now, I got an email from a young guy and he wrote to me and said, Lars, as far as I can tell, this is only a line in a book right now. We still have to verify if this is even true or has any merit. Why are you talking about it as if it's a fact? I'm not. I'm citing the source. And you're free to believe in Bob Woodward's books or not believe in them. Like General Milley, did he actually really do this? We don't know that yet. Don't think that one, that's one of the main problems of the media today, is running with the story without confirming it. Well, I'm anxious to see the United States Congress call General Milley up. I don't think the Democrats are going to want to do this. And ask General Milley, did you say these things? Did you really call the Chinese communists and say, if America is going to attack you, I will give you advance warning? And give General Milley a chance to respond. It would debunk Bob Woodward's book if the book is not true. It would confirm Bob Woodward's book if it is true. But as far as confirming things, listen, I cite my sources and say this is who's claiming that General Milley actually told the Pentagon officials, do not do anything based on what Donald Trump says, only do it if I say so. Now, if General Milley said that, he should be court-martialed. As far as I'm concerned, he's committed crimes. He's violated the UCMJ. He's violated the chain of command, which in the United States goes from the President of the United States to the Secretary of Defense to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs and then down into the bowels of the bureaucracy at the Pentagon. If somebody within the Pentagon says, don't just take the president's word for it, check it with me first, and then picks up the phone and calls his counterpart in the Chinese Communist People's Liberation Army and says, we won't attack you unless I give you advance warning first. Somebody tell me you think that's the way things should go. Now, to the question asked by Michael Colton, well, can't we verify this before we talk about it? Michael, sometimes the one thing that gets people on Capitol Hill asking questions about it, the book has already been published or it will be published and released next week. At that point, members of Congress should be asking, did General Milley really seize control of America's nuclear weapons by telling his officers at the Pentagon that no nuclear weapons could be launched on the president's say-so alone, that they could only be launched on his say-so? I think this is just General Milley trying to get back at Donald Trump because Donald Trump has had some critical things to say about General Milley. Now, if you say, well, that's legitimate, isn't it? No, it's not. If General Milley deliberately countermanded or undermined the chain of command of the military, that's something the UCMJ says you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to do it if you're a private in the Army. You aren't allowed to run around saying, well, the sergeant's an idiot or the captain's an idiot or the colonel or the general is an idiot. Don't follow their commands unless I say so. You're not allowed to do that. I've never been in the military, but I know the UCMJ well enough to know that. Now, I want to mention something that Joe Biden did. And this is where Crazy Joe has started telling such crazy stories. You know that over the last couple of months, he's claimed that at one point he drove an 18-wheeler, a long-haul truck. He's also said at various times that his grandfather was a coal miner and all kinds of other stuff. Here's the reporting out of Boise, Idaho. During yesterday's visit to Boise, Biden received a briefing about the ongoing wildfires that have plagued several states out west. Now, what Biden said was, he said, why I got my first job offer from Boise Cascade, which out here in the Pacific Northwest is a well-known, very large wood products company. Boise Cascade said, we have no record whatsoever that we've ever talked to Joe Biden, not back then, and certainly not recently. We've never offered him a job. He's never had an interview with the company. But then what happened was even more interesting. He got a briefing, and he spoke for much of the briefing. But then George Geisler, who is with the National Association of State Foresters, he and Biden were speaking, and Biden wanted to ask him a question. I want you to listen to what happened as the president of the United States is about to ask a question at a briefing about the wildfires that have been going on here in the West for decades. Take a listen.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
One of the things that I've been working on with some others is...
At that point, the White House cut the feed. Now, I think all of us have seen the stories, I've certainly seen them, that the White House staff is scared to death of letting Joe Biden go off script. They allow him to read off a teleprompter. But then even the president himself has told reporters, I'm not supposed to ask any questions, which has made a lot of us ask, you're the president of the United States. You're arguably the most powerful person on planet Earth. You are the commander-in-chief. You're the leader of the free world. You're the president of the most powerful country on planet Earth. Who is it that's telling you, Mr. President, you're not supposed to answer questions? You're not supposed to talk to reporters. Don't take those questions. And lately, the president seems to be getting cut off by his own staff. Now, his staff members anonymously have told reporters that when Joe Biden starts to go off script, they actually want to turn the audio off, because they know that Joe Biden has said some crazy stuff when he goes off script. As long as he sticks to the teleprompter, they're perfectly safe. The minute he starts to wander off of that, he either starts babbling like an idiot because I don't think he's all right upstairs, or he starts to say crazy stuff that they have to try to sort out later on. In fact, the White House, Jen Psaki, his spokeswoman, has taken to starting briefings immediately when the president stops speaking, because she's got to explain what it is he said and what it is she says he didn't say or they didn't want him to say. In any case, it's the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. A lot of crazy things have been going on in the United States of America lately, and I think one of the craziest is that we decided to depart Afghanistan. Americans were behind that, and Americans on both sides of the political aisle said, it's time for us to go. The question is, how do we exit? And I'd remind you that about 1 month ago, the president right now, Joe Biden, said, I will not leave. We will not leave Afghanistan until we get every last American out of that country. And within weeks, he violated that promise and announced that we're going to have everybody out, but some Americans will be left behind. Well, there are not only efforts by the United States government to get people out, but there are efforts by private groups as well, including two of them I'd like to talk about today, Spartan Sword and Patriot Mountain. And Jason Ladd joins me now, who's the public affairs officer for the two groups. Jason, thank you very much for joining me, and thanks for your service in uniform.
Hey, thank you for having me, Mr. Larson.
Would you mind? Don't call. I'm just Lars. I mean, you're the guy who's got the admirable resume. Would you mind, for my audience, just telling them the service you've done in uniform? Because I want them to know who they're listening to.
Sure. And I served 12 years. I was medically retired. I was an infantryman. Served two tours in Iraq, two tours in Afghanistan as an infantryman. Was wounded once, and medically retired. And when I left the uniformed services, I picked up the civilian contracting jobs, is what some people call as the dirty, stinking, rotten contractors for Department of State and Department of Defense. So at that point is where I started really working with the special operations forces and doing things of that dark world nature.
All right, Jason, would you mind doing this? Describe what the cause of Spartan Sword and Patriot Mountain is, and what are you doing right now to try to get people out of Afghanistan? And I take it this is not just Americans, but also green card holders and some of those who helped us on the ground there while we were there for 20 years.
That's correct, Lars. And here's the thing with Spartan Sword and Patriot Mountain. You know, here's what we're doing. We're currently providing support to ground elements in Afghanistan right now. And what we're doing is we're saving these support elements are there to save the lives and bring Americans and these Afghan allies home safely and home safely in accordance with, you know, the international laws to prevent these atrocities, right, that's going on over there right now, this genocide. And also to prevent human trafficking in these young girls, young boys, and then to restore the faith of the United States, right? Its government and its people. I mean, ultimately, right now, that's our biggest goal right now is to restore this faith. Lars, we've got an ongoing mission. And one of the I'm not going to give out numbers and whatnot just for operational security standpoints, but we've got several females that we have been tasked to get out of Afghanistan. And when I say several, I'm going to just say in excess of 30 females. These are young females. You know, they can range when I say young, they're probably under 25 years old. And with each passing hour, this mission changes. But our mission is to get them out of there safely. Border crossings are requiring monetary bribes. Checkpoints, these Taliban checkpoints, they're requiring monetary bribes. And safety for these girls is literally non-existent. You know, and what our teams have done at this point, we're working directly with teams inside Afghanistan. And then Patriot Mountain and Spartan Sword humanitarian aid teams are setting up in the surrounding countries of Afghanistan, setting up these humanitarian aid camps in order to receive these misplaced refugees, these Americans, to triage them, these Afghan allies to triage them and provide medical treatment, housing, you know, a form of transportation and food and water. The literally, Lars, the basic necessities is what we're providing at this point. And we're stepping up because we've had an investment, right? The uniformed soldiers, the contractors, we've had years and years of investment in these countries, and we've met, you know, just numerous amounts of people that are just wonderful people. The Afghan people, they're amazing. The kids, they're loving kids. You know, the news shows a lot of stuff about the, you know, the horrors of Afghanistan and the Middle East and Central Asia and things.
Sure.
It's not that, to be honest, it is not that bad. These people are good, hardworking, honest people. And they've stepped out and put their lives on the line for you and I, right? And the listeners on this show, they've put their lives on the line and said, hey, I will help the coalition forces in any capacity necessary. And I'll get out there and I'll say, you know, okay, yeah, these bad guys were in placing mines over here. You know, we don't want the coalition forces to get hurt. We don't want the contractors to get hurt. So they turn these people in. The next thing you know, they're employed by us, and they serve diligently in these roles, and they deserve to be given a better life than what they have growing
well, and,
up.
And Jason, let me ask you this. Two things. Your reaction to the idea that the United States would simply say, we're out of here and leave these people behind. And secondly, what would happen to them if they were left to the devices of the Taliban?
You know, Lars, let me tell you that. If on this radio show, I couldn't give you my exact feelings, right? It just wouldn't be appropriate. So you can just read what's coming from my heart and through my voice. Is, you know, it was very upsetting. It was heartbreaking, and it was it just angered a lot of us. You know, and we had to do something. We had to stand up. We had to do something because our State Department failed to do that. They failed to get those people out of there, our own people, our own allies. So it's people like us that said, this is not going to happen. We're going to stand up, we're going to raise money, and we're going to go in there and we're going to pull these people out of there. We're going to get them to safety, and we're going to give them what they deserve.
And the group, by the way, is Afghan Relief Mission. Jason Ladd is the PAO, the public affairs officer, for the groups Spartan Sword and Patriot Mountain, trying to get some of those people out of Afghanistan. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network on a Tuesday. Always glad to be with you and serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Well, at least Monday through Friday. We're glad to have you join the conversation, by the way. If you're a naysayer, you'll go right to the head of the line. And if you want to participate by voting on our Twitter poll, the question I've asked, and I think it's backed up by the reporting that has been done, I don't necessarily like Bob Woodward. I don't like all of the things that he's written. He was quite a reporter at the Washington Post, got quite a reputation after Watergate and the scandal involving President Nixon. But he writes books every couple of years, and this one claims that one of America's top generals, the guy whose name is most closely associated with the debacle of the departure from Afghanistan, General Mark Milley, that he now says in this book, and I've had a few people saying, well, how do we know he really said that? Well, I can tell you this. If General Milley did not say the things that Bob Woodward claims he says, I can guarantee you that General Milley's attorneys would have been talking to Bob Woodward's publisher saying, you can't publish this book if it puts words in our client's mouth that he didn't say. Did one of our top generals commit treason by seizing control of America's nuclear weapons? General Milley claims that in the days immediately following the January 6th riot on Capitol Hill, so the last 2 weeks when Donald Trump was president, that General Milley became concerned that Donald Trump was going to start a war, perhaps with China, that he might launch nuclear weapons. So he called a special meeting of people at the Pentagon. It almost sounds like something out of a crazy movie that most Hollywood producers would have said, you know what, this is too far-fetched. That he told his underlings at the Pentagon, you are not to take any action unless you clear it with me first. In other words, it's not the commander-in-chief who's in charge. It's not the defense secretary following the orders of the president. It's General Mark Milley who has the ultimate veto power. He then told Bob Woodward that he called his counterpart in the Chinese Communist People's Liberation Army and said, why, we might launch an attack, but I will try to stop it. But if we do, if America does decide to launch an attack against China, that General Milley allegedly said to the Chinese, I will warn you about the attack before it happens. Now, I think any of that would be considered violation of the UCMJ. It might be considered treason. It certainly could be considered a number of things, but it's not the way that a member of America's military should be behaving. So did one of our top generals commit treason by seizing control of America's nuclear weapons? I'd say yes to that. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. We always start with naysayers, and Gordon is just such a naysayer, listening in Seattle on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. Hey, Gordon, what do you and I disagree about today?
What we disagree about is you're making fun of our beloved president's misstatements. And because either having to do with the withdrawal, either he committed treason or he is senile. And if he is indeed senile, that is the most dangerous. He is not the most dangerous person on the face of the planet because he has the authority to launch nuclear weapons and nobody can stop him.
Do you think Donald Trump is senile? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying about Trump. I'm talking about Biden.
Biden, yeah. And so what do you and I disagree about? I think Joe Biden is losing it upstairs as well. So it sounds like we agree, doesn't it?
Yes, but you're not taking it seriously enough.
What other way do we have of getting the point across than to say these are the crazy things that Joe Biden is doing so that people will understand it? Because most of the mainstream media, they won't make anything of the fact that Joe Biden is constantly running around saying, I used to be a truck driver. My dad was a coal miner. I got an offer from Boise Cascade. It suggests to me that Joe Biden is losing it upstairs. And yet, as you say, he's got his finger on the button.
Yes, and that scares the shit out of me. I'm sorry.
You know what? We're going to have to drop your call at that point. Dump, 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 dump. You know, when people drop words like that, I hope we dump that. Hit the delay. When people do things like that, I understand that Gordon from Seattle may have done that inadvertently. Some people just can't talk without using a swear word. But when you use a swear word like that, it gets me in big trouble, or at least has the potential to do so. But I take Gordon's point. I'm not thinking it's funny that Joe Biden is, he says some crazy things, and you almost can't believe, as I get up every day, I wonder what crazy thing did Joe Biden say today, and how much of it will the mainstream media share with the American people? They're obviously not sharing much. I didn't see any conventional reporting yesterday that talked about the fact that Joe Biden was claiming that he had a job offer from a big wood products company back when he was a younger man here in the Pacific Northwest, and that the company involved says, we have no idea what he's talking about. We've never talked to Joe Biden. We've never interviewed him. We've never offered him a job. That none of that is apparently true. And so you have a president who apparently either makes things up out of whole cloth and simply says them because, I don't know, nobody's going to question him. You've got a staff back at the White House that when the president starts to go off script and starts to ask questions of his own, the White House team actually cuts the audio feeds so you can't hear whatever crazy thing he was about to say. Now, I do want to bring one thing up. And I had reached out to this labor union that represents a gigantic number of nurses, in this case, nurses who work at Kaiser Permanente. Big organization, lots of nurses. I reached out to their union this morning, and I thought that Shane Burley, who I'd spoken to at their labor union, just so the nurses who hear about this, if you think we don't invite the unions on to talk about these things, we do. I talked to Shane Burley, who represents the Nurses Association. Their release today said nearly half of all Kaiser nurses say they are considering leaving the profession because of the behavior of Kaiser Permanente toward their staff. Over the last week, Kaiser Permanente registered nurses represented by the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals, the OFNHP, filled out a survey asking how they were responding to the COVID crisis. 42% of them surveyed, said they are considering leaving the field entirely over the treatment they've received at Kaiser. Over 60% report that they are considering leaving Kaiser Permanente as a company, and nearly 60% are considering leaving their department. Those surveys show that the way that Kaiser is treating their healthcare professionals is leading to burnout and exacerbating the staffing crisis. You've heard from many of the nurses and the doctors who've called this show, who've said, we are being told you either take the jab, the COVID vaccine jab, or you're going to lose your job. And that kind of threat is not going over well with a highly trained group of people who say, look, we can take our skills elsewhere. Like the doctor who wrote to me last week, who said he's a surgeon. He's been a traveling surgeon throughout Washington State doing specialty surgery on kids. He said, I don't have to keep my skills here. My skills will travel.
and he's going to leave. And when parents start to wonder, why are we short of doctors and why are we short of nurses? That may be the reason why. Coming up in a moment, did we learn anything from the Secretary of State's testimony that would give Joe Biden a get-out-of-failure-free card? We'll talk about that coming up in a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails then.
The Obama administration droned hundreds and hundreds of people. And the thing is there is blowback to that. I mean, I don't know if it's true, but I see these pictures of these beautiful children that were killed in the attack. If that's true, and not propaganda, if that's true, guess what? Maybe you created hundreds or thousands of new potential terrorists from bombing the wrong people.
That is Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. He was questioning the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, today, and an awful lot of it revolved around those questions. Do you know who it is that you're killing? Well, I thought we'd talk about that with Jason Kilmeyer, who is a counterterrorism and foreign policy expert specializing in emerging technology applications. Jason, welcome back to the program.
Lars, thanks for having me.
Did you see most of that exchange between Senator Rand Paul and Anthony Blinken? Because I found it kind of extraordinary today to watch it.
Yeah, to me, a lot of the takeaways from today, I didn't find that useful, but I thought that is the value of congressional Senate hearings at their finest, is when we can make a point, have it be that finely tuned. And quite frankly, you know, Blinken's response sort of showed they had no good answer.
Well, and in fact, because what this comes down to is we have the American exit from Afghanistan, the 13 service members murdered by Taliban, whether it's Taliban or ISIS-K, no matter who it happens to be, because at this point, I'm not sure. Do you feel confident in believing the assertions of our government saying, oh, yeah, that was ISIS-K that killed, our guys and one young lady? It was not Taliban, the folks that we're currently negotiating with and depending on for the exit of Americans and green card holders from the country. But can we even trust what they're telling us at this point?
Well, and Lars, I think you make a good point, which is regardless of whether the Taliban, whose American security we put in their hands, think how exceptional that is, whether they failed to simply protect the Americans whose security they were put in charge of, or whether they were incapable or unwilling, the result was dead Americans.
Yeah.
And so we're now in a scenario, you mentioned the civilians, in which the defense secretary, the head of the CIA, just today the deputy director of the CIA, have all admitted we're about to be blind in Afghanistan. So the civilian casualties, when we do intervene by air over the next couple of years, are going to increase, not decrease. The chances of those tragedies happening are about to become much more likely due to this administration's policy.
Jason, you might call me cynical, but on the day when a couple of days after our American service members were murdered, we heard from the White House, well, we've dropped a Predator drone missile, of some kind, and we've killed some bad guys. And they're high profile, or at least medium high profile bad guys. And the first question was, well, if they're bad guys, if they're at the top of the food chain or near there, you should be able to tell us who they are. And the White House and the Pentagon said, we're not going to tell you who it was that we got. You got two important people and you wiped them off the face of the earth with missiles and you won't tell us who they are. Usually administrations, Obama, Bush, Biden, Trump, you were proud to say, no, these are the bad guys we got, or at least these are the guys we believe we got. They wouldn't tell us. And then it comes out, oh, it turns out we had a bunch of civilians, right?
Yeah. And Lars, I tell you, there was such a rush on behalf of Biden and team to paint themselves as hawkish. In the midst of all of this American humiliation, they wanted to show, hey, we're just as mad as you are. We're going to take out some bad guys. Well, if their intel was that good, they should have prevented the attack in the first place. And if it wasn't that good, then they have to admit they accepted risk. But, Blinken used this word twice today, if not three or four times. He used it yesterday, relentless, a bunch of times. It was our counterterrorism strategy will be robust. And then a couple days ago, I think Austin said we will be relentless. So they use these sort of very overcharged, over-the-top adjectives to mask for the fact that, as Senator Risch pointed out today, there is no plan. The over-the-horizon stuff hasn't really been figured out. They haven't reported any of it to Congress because they haven't done the work.
Well, and the other thing that Blinken mentioned yesterday, and correct me if I'm wrong, but yesterday he said, look, we can assure you the Taliban has no ability to reach out and hit the American homeland. And I thought, hold on a second. We just brought 116,000 people in. 6,000 were Americans. The other 110 are a mix of who knows, people that helped us, people that were good people, maybe people that are bad people. We're hearing about some of them being intercepted in Qatar and other places saying, no, you're on the terrorist watch list. We're not going to let you just walk into America. We also heard about a convicted rapist who was brought in all the way to Dulles. I mean, 30 miles from Washington, D.C., managed to get that far. And I thought, you're assuring us that they can't reach out and touch us? How many of their guys got sneaked into that bunch that we airlifted out of there, and many of them coming back to American communities or coming to American communities? They've never been here before. How can you assure us that they can't reach out and touch us when we may well have given a free flight to the United States to some of the bad guys?
Yeah, and I tell you, Lars, so what we're going to have to figure out is, can that vetting process happen sufficiently over time? And what does that require of us in the short term? Here's what I mean by that. We brought people over, right, like you said, that might get flagged in any of these existing databases.
Right.
We also brought people over with child brides, quite literally. Do we separate them? What is our policy? Have we had child brides in the United States? I mean, what an absurd kind of moment we're in. So we're dealing with that at the same time that there's another influx, not to the United States, but to Afghanistan, again, as reported today, with Al-Qaeda leaders making their way back to Afghanistan. And so we're now seeing that draw, right, that example of quote-unquote pure, pristine Islamic living that the Taliban will advertise themselves as an example of, much like they did in the 90s. And people start to cycle in, and they get training, and they do planning. We've seen this part of the movie before, too. And so I'm more concerned about that, but I also hear you about these concerns, the great unknown of the folks that have been evacuated.
Well, you brought up an important point. I mean, about a week ago when I saw all these communities, mostly in blue states, I happen to live in a blue state, the state of Washington, they're saying, oh, we're going to welcome the Afghan refugees with open arms. And for some of them, that kind of welcome might be right. But when I saw the report that they said, we've got old men bringing in children and saying, yeah, this is my wife. I said, what are you going to do with them? That can't be legal. But I don't see the bluer states in America taking any kind of action at all. So we're effectively, by the action of states within the United States, endorsing the idea that an old man married to a 12-year-old is perfectly okay if he was brought in as a refugee, and we're just going to ignore it. Because I guess, do you see anybody taking action against that right now?
Well, you know, there was some pointed question on that from Senator Cruz today. And Blinken essentially just didn't respond. He said, we're also concerned about that. But when they attempted to pin him down, are they here? Are those folks in Qatar? Are they here in the United States? Are they at one of the existing U.S. military bases? If so, how are those people housed? Will that individual become the guardian? How will that work in U.S. policy? The reason they don't have answers is because they planned for none of this. And so the great untold story is if someone else was in charge here, if any Republican, forget about just Trump, there would be reporters camped outside every one of those military bases. They would be getting off the record interviews with the Afghan refugees instead of the essential media blackout that we have right now. But this is the strategy. We saw it today when Blinken refused to answer those questions in sufficient detail. They're going to deny. They're going to refuse to admit any wrongdoing, and they're going to wait till the news cycle sweeps this away.
Absolutely right. Jason Kilmeyer is a counterterrorism and foreign policy expert. Jason, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. This segment brought to you by Nick Shivers. Go to nickshivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles. You pick the closing date. nickshivers.com for details. Now, about that interview I just did with the foreign policy and terrorism expert, he raises an important question that I wish that some of my friends in television and at the Fish Wrapper, the Seattle Times of the Oregonian, the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, would ask of somebody like Kate Brown or Jay Inslee. You're saying that you're going to welcome all these Afghan refugees. What about the old men with 12 and 13-year-old brides? Are you going to welcome them as well? Is that not child abuse under state law when you are married, quote unquote, to somebody who is under the age of 14? Neil Goldschmidt, the former governor and former transportation secretary, found out that he was raping a child when she was 13 years of age, having sex with a child with or without consent. Consent doesn't matter at that age. It is considered a rape. So if you have Afghan refugees who are coming into the community and you have older men married to 12 and 13 and 14-year-old girls, will state officials actually take any action? Well, they say you cannot allow this kind of thing. This is child abuse. This man is committing a crime. Or will they say, oh, we have to welcome these refugees that Joe Biden has created, and we have to accept it's culturally different for them? Well, you're in the United States. The rules are different. And as everybody knows who's ever traveled outside the boundaries of the United States, when the rules are different somewhere else, you don't get to say, well, we do this at home. It's no big deal when we do it at home. Well, you're not at home anymore. You're in the United States and the laws here apply. So I'd love to see a reporter. It could be my friend Pat Doris at the NBC affiliate, or it could be Jeff Pogula up at the ABC affiliate in Seattle. Ask Jay Inslee, ask these groups, these mayors that are saying, we're going to welcome the refugees with open arms. How about the ones who are committing rape and child abuse by being married to a 12 or a 13-year-old? Is it worth asking about that? And on that note, let's go to Lou in Linden, Washington. Hey, Lou, welcome to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Lars. On the week of 9/11, I like to ask people if they recall or ever knew what the first act of George Washington was as president of the United States. In 1789, he was inaugurated in New York City, and his first act was to rest his hand on the words of Moses, David, Isaiah, and, of course, Jesus.
The Bible.
And he did that right near Ground Zero. In fact, after the inauguration was over, he walked a few blocks to Ground Zero to St. Paul's Chapel. And there at St. Paul's Chapel, which is still there today, it's one of the oldest buildings in the United States, he warned the United States from Deuteronomy chapter 28. Your listeners can look up Deuteronomy chapter 28.
Lou, just share it with us, because for people who cannot look it up until they get home, share it with us.
Sure.
I want you to make your point.
And the warning there, the warning George Washington gave us as a nation, was that God will bless us, bless our cities, bless our countryside, as long as we adhere with an honest attempt to the Judeo-Christian values that are the root of our culture. And then he warned that if we don't do that, God will withdraw his protection from us as a nation, and the curses which befall nations will fall on us. And what I see now is not that our problem is being Joe Biden, you know, the incompetent senile old man and the corrupt politicians. The problem is we, the people, have gotten so far away from our Judeo-Christian roots that we've lost the protection that have kept our country safe for so many decades.
You may be right about that, Lou. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Richard. Hey, Richard, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, this was a response to something Joe Biden said, to a response of what Trump said at a boxing match this weekend, apparently. And he started off talking about boxing matches, but then he kind of rambled into something like an old man would have that has a brain like tomato soup. But he started to talk, and I think he actually said a truth that the way he feels that if General Lee was in Afghanistan, we would have won.
He said that?
That's what I got out of what he said.
Okay. Well,
you look
Joe
it
does
up online and
he does say some crazy stuff.
That's what it sounds like. Pretty crazy.
And I guess really the question then is, is, should we take the guy seriously when he's given to saying crazy stuff so very often?
Well, when it's that crazy, I might. maybe he's so gone in the head, he's actually telling something he really feels.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to do. I mean, because I think we start with the assumption that we're going to have a competent commander-in-chief. And I don't think we have a competent commander-in-chief right now. I think his staff knows that. The very fact that his staff will tell reporters off the record, anytime he goes off script, we get worried. The fact that the White House yesterday in Boise, Idaho, when the president began asking a question, and for all we know, it might have been a perfectly sensible question. He was asking it of Mr. Geisler, who's the head of the National Foresters Association, and he might have been asking him something perfectly sensible. But when the White House cuts the audio feed, they're telling us we don't trust what he's about to say because he may say something completely crazy. And I think they're probably right to be worried about that. And then we've got General Milley, who appears to have committed treason. And will he answer for that? You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. We'll do that in just a bit, but I wanted to talk to my friend Dr. Roger Stark. He's at the Washington Policy Center about a rather novel idea that might actually take some explaining. And the idea is that providing free health insurance to the poor. So we're not talking about Medicare. That is for older Americans in general. We're talking about Medicaid, and they're very different. That doing this actually puts people in worse shape than if you simply left them to the private marketplace. Now, I understand some of you may say, well, that can't be true. If we're giving them free health insurance, that's got to make things better. Dr. Stark, welcome back to the program.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Lars.
So explain to my audience how this works, that when you offer up Medicaid, and Obamacare dramatically expanded the income definition under which you could get Medicaid by changing the income requirements and all that, so that many more people would be on Medicaid, this actually puts people in worse shape. Why is that?
Well, Medicaid began in 1965 with all good intentions. It was essentially a safety net for low-income families that had children. And what has happened, what's transformed now since 1965, it's become this monolithic, huge entitlement that is forcing taxpayers, both state and federal taxpayers, to support this entitlement. Throughout the course of Medicaid, there have been a number of studies that have showed that specifically that there are no better outcomes, except in very unusual or rare cases, there are no better outcomes with Medicaid than not having insurance at all. One of the hallmark studies was done in Oregon. They looked at about 6,000 or 8,000 people, put them in the Medicaid program. They put another 6,000 to 8,000 people with the same health issues, the same socioeconomic background, and they did not put them in Medicaid. They were essentially uninsured. And after several years, they looked back at the data, and the people that were uninsured basically had no worse health outcomes than the people that were in the Medicaid program. And so it's been documented time and time again that just having Medicaid doesn't provide better health outcomes. Now, people will say, well, yeah, but they have health insurance. Well, sure, but just having health insurance doesn't mean timely access to good care. And that's the real problem, the crux of the problem here with this Medicaid entitlement.
Well, and doctor, isn't some of this about personal responsibility as well? And I've looked at that study that you're talking about. I think it was Harvard that did it. And what happened was Oregon, for a couple of years, didn't have any money to expand Medicaid. So they said, okay, in the meantime, sign up, and when we have some extra money, we'll expand the program. And if you said, well, how do we decide who gets in? They said, we'll have a lottery, and we'll just choose people at random. We're not going to choose younger, healthier people. We're not going to choose older, not-so-healthy people. We're just going to choose at random. And that's how they got the random sample. They got 6,000 or 8,000 people and said, you're in the program. They said to another 6,000 or 8,000, you're not in the program, but you're from the same crowd. You qualify income-wise to get this kind of care. And as you said, they looked at it several years later. The crowd that had the Medicaid card, They spent more money. I think it was almost $1,200 a month more that they spent on health care, but they were spending it not on preventative stuff. They were just, you know, when they got sick enough, they'd go to the emergency room, and it cost tremendous amounts of money, but it didn't necessarily make them healthier because they didn't do what many people might assume you'd do if you had an insurance card in your wallet, is say, I'm going to go see my doctor on a regular basis and spot problems before they become problems. They didn't change their own behavior, just simply having a card in their wallet.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Lars. And then there was a follow-up study looking at the same groups of people, and what they documented was that the people with that Medicaid card in their pocket, they actually used the emergency rooms much more than the people who were uninsured. So you're absolutely right. The cost was exorbitant for no basic health gain, and it's just been a tragedy.
Well, let's talk about another thing that you wrote about at the Washington Policy Center. How well vaccinated is the group of people on Medicaid? And it even surprised me when I saw you write about what you'd assume, well, if you've got free health care, quote unquote free, meaning somebody else, the taxpayers pay for it, well, then you'd expect that group to be very well protected in terms of vaccination, but they're not.
Yeah, exactly. That study came out a week or two ago, and it was a shock to me as well. I thought, my gosh, these people have free health care. You would think that they would be accessing vaccinations at the same rate that the rest of the population. But no, they're not. It depends on the locale, the state, so forth, the region. But Medicaid population, their vaccination rate is 30 to 60% less than non-Medicaid patients and non-Medicaid population. So it was shocking to me, and yet we're throwing billions of taxpayer dollars at this Medicaid program, which by virtually every standard is failing the American public, and especially those who really need health care and health insurance. So it's been a real tragedy.
Well, and in fact, in the piece you wrote for Washington Policy Center, to give people an idea, a dollar figure to put with it, in 2019, Medicaid cost two-thirds of $1 trillion. That's what the cost was to the taxpayers, right?
Yeah, and here's the other statistic. In 1970, 5 years after the program began, Medicaid spent, or taxpayers spent about $5 billion. In 2013, taxpayers spent $450 billion. And the last number is 2019, like you said, over $600 billion. And the costs just keep going up and up and up astronomically. And it's unsustainable, Lars. There is no way that the American taxpayer can afford the Medicaid program as it exists today if it's not dramatically reformed.
Well, the other effect, and I want you to comment on this while we've got the time. I've had friends and family members say, well, I was going to take this job that I got offered, but I've decided not to. They don't have a good health insurance plan, or it costs the worker a lot more than my current plan, so they don't go. In this case, if you're giving people quote unquote free health care paid for by somebody else, then it diminishes the effect of any job offer they might get where the job says, hey, we've got this great health plan. You go, I don't care. I'm already getting it free of charge from the government, and your health plan is based on the job, and my free health care from the government is based on the taxpayers. So I'm going to stick with that.
Right. It's a real disincentive to improve your work status. If you make 138% of the federal poverty level or less, you qualify for Medicaid. You make 139% of the federal poverty level, you get kicked out of the Medicaid program. You lose your Medicaid health insurance plan, and it really it's a disincentive, like I say, to try and improve your work status, get a better job, more pay, and so forth. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Dr. Stark, it's a pleasure. That's Dr. Roger Stark with the Washington Policy Center. We'll be back in just a moment. And the sheriff in Snohomish County is pushing back about comments by liberal lawmakers on police reforms in the state of Washington. We'll get to that on the Radio Northwest Network up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. This segment of the show brought to you by Marquee Hot Tubs. They'll give you the ultimate hot tub and swim spa experience. Visit online or visit one of their three locations, marqueehottubs.com. Now, A couple of months ago, I read a letter to you that was written by the sheriff of the county I live in, Clark County, Washington. And in it, he detailed, we did try to get the sheriff to come on. He did not come on. But it was a great letter because it talked about a law that was about to go into effect, passed by the nitwits in this case in Olympia, Washington, who passed a law that essentially said to the police, we're not going to let you do your job, that you're going to be limited in the criminals you can chase. You're going to be limited in what you can do when someone is confronting a crazy person, unless the crazy person is actually committing a crime right then and there or is an immediate threat to health or safety. You can't do much about it. And we went through all the examples that were offered up by the sheriff of Clark County. Well, now the Snohomish County Sheriff, Adam Fortney, he wrote an op-ed for the Everett Herald in which he said recent comments by liberal lawmakers that these new laws are not stopping the police from stopping criminals were, quote, simply not accurate. Randy Pebble and Shiftwaugh have covered this very, very well, and there's credit where credit is due. And that, according to the sheriff, an overwhelming consensus of law enforcement in the state is that these new laws are keeping the police and sheriff's departments from doing their jobs, and they've had a serious impact on the effectiveness of law enforcement. We told you that in some cases, when a cop shows up at a scene, if a crime is not being committed right in front of the cop, and there is no person who is about to do something dangerous or deadly, that the police are actually obliged to leave the scene. And if they do not leave the scene, they can be stripped of the credentials that allow them to work as police. It's that bad. This is what Olympia has shoved on the state of Washington. Oregon, not nearly as restricted, although the politicians in Oregon seem to be willing to hamstring the police all day long. Sheriff Fortney, writes Shiftwaugh, provided an excellent description of how these radical new laws are the most extreme in the nation and how they're allowing obvious criminals to go free to commit even more crimes. He concluded by stating, it is not often that the 39 elected sheriffs in Washington state are in agreement, but they all agree that dramatic fixes need to be made to the new laws and that a special session of the legislature should be called to ensure that criminals do not roam free and commit crimes with impunity. I couldn't agree more. And I suppose the question I always like to ask when we have crazy stuff like this come out of the legislature, whether it's Salem or Boise or Olympia, is how many people have to die before they will fix this? They literally, one of the examples from the sheriff of my county that he gave before the law went into effect, so he gave fair warning. When this law goes into effect, this will be the result. He said, if a police officer is called to a, let's say, an armed robbery in progress, and they describe the person as, let's use my description, 5'10", 195 pounds, a dark hair, wearing a blue baseball cap. As the officer is going to the scene, if he sees somebody hustling away from the scene, say a block or two away from where the armed robbery is supposed to have happened, who matches the description, the officer is not allowed to stop that person under the new so-called reforms. And if you say, well, Lars, that's crazy. You're responding to an armed robbery. They describe the robber. Somebody matching that description is a couple of blocks away from the scene and headed the other direction, and the officer is not allowed to act. No, the officer is not allowed to act. They do not want the police to do their jobs. Now, on that note, let's go to Ron in Tacoma. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind today? Ron?
Chaos of the United States, like usual. Just chaos of the United States, like usual. I have a question for you, Lars.
Sure.
I heard today that the Democrats want to take away your job, travel, just about everything for the COVID-19.
Yep.
I'm just wondering, who's all the Republicans at? Not jumping on board saying, okay, that's a great idea. So we'll add on to this little bill or whatever they're trying to push and say, if you're a refugee, if you're legally in this country, guess what? You don't get a refugee check. You don't get any medical. You don't get any services either unless we can prove that you've had your COVID-19 shot.
You know what, Ron? Yesterday I played a soundbite. I think we've still got it. It's Jen Psaki, the president's spokeswoman. And, you know, she's usually playing cleanup on whatever Joe says, because half the time you can't understand what he's saying. And the other half the time he's saying something completely lunatic. And Peter Ducey, who's a pretty good reporter who works for Fox News, was asking her, so And he literally said it this way. Bryce, do we still have that soundbite? Because he says, now hold on. So people who are coming across illegally into the United States are not required to be vaccinated. But take a listen to what the exact wording, because I want you to hear exactly what she said.
It's a requirement for people at a business with more than 100 people. It is not a requirement for migrants at the southern border. Why?
That's correct.
That's correct. I mean, that was the sum total of what Jen Psaki would say. Yep, you got it right. If you're an American citizen working at a job at a company with 102 employees, you are required to be vaccinated. If you're coming illegally into the United States as an illegal alien, you're not. And all she would say was, that's correct. That's the level of responsiveness that we're getting from the current administration, Ron.
Yeah, and you know, I think, Lars, the problem is we don't. I'm tired of Republicans in this country being Mitt Romney's and Liz Cheney's.
Agreed.
We've got to start getting. We've got to get people in this country to start playing chess like the Democrats. I don't. If there was one thing, just one thing, I was going to say that needs to be changed to stop a lot of this. Why is the Supreme Court allowed to? I understand when they get to pick and choose their cases.
But they do.
When you have national crises going on, I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. There are some things that you need to rule on tomorrow.
Well, but Ron,
we could be too late.
Ron, part of the problem is there are people who think the Supreme Court can just simply act on things, and they cannot. We've written the system because otherwise they would effectively be another form of the legislature or a veto on the legislature. And there is a reason why we have three branches of government. You've got the executive. At the state level, that's the governor. At the state level, that's the legislature. And then you've got the courts. So you've got legislative, executive, and judicial. And the Supreme Court is not allowed to simply say, we see something wrong going on, so we're going to go in and fix it by declaring it illegal or unconstitutional. They have to have a case brought to them. I mean, it may be brought to them at the last minute in the case of a death row inmate who is about to be executed, not in Oregon, Washington, since the governors here don't like to follow the law on that. But you have to bring a case to them. And usually the case has to make its way to them through the lower courts. And if the lower courts rule on it, the Supreme Court takes up, I think it's about 200 cases a year, and they make some kind of decision. They either declare that the case is moot, meaning it's over, it won't matter. They can rule in favor of the lower court ruling, or they can overrule the lower court ruling, but it generally has to come to them through the courts. So this is why every time there's a lawyer on, and I'm going to talk to an attorney about Biden's vaccine mandate in about 2 minutes, 5 minutes, sorry, after the break, that you have to have that case wend its way up to the Supreme Court. They get thousands of requests to hear cases. They hear a couple of hundred, and we're told they're overworked. They are not overworked in the slightest. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to jump into the conversation, even as a naysayer, you just call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. For at least the last several weeks, the most common question I get from people either calling the show or emailing the show or comments that I see on social media, Twitter I'd like to get away from, Getter is much, much better. The question is it legal for Joe Biden, the president of the United States, to push out a vaccine mandate like the one he pushed out last week that says every American who works in a job for a company bigger than 100 employees must get the vaccine? And is that legal? I thought we'd put that to Devin Watkins, who's an attorney for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Mr. Watkins, welcome back.
I'm glad to be here, Lars.
Let's start with a broader question, and that is, does Joe Biden have the legal authority, even if he's working through, say, the Department of Labor, or OSHA, or one of the many, many federal regulatory agencies, does he have the authority to do this?
The short answer is no. There's a variety of problems with what he is proposing. Some of them have to do with the statutory problems of the specific OSHA Act. It has requirements as to it being a grave danger to employees and that it has to be necessary to get done. And when you see things like it's only being applied to some employers, they're going to exempt people like, you know, Postal Service doesn't have to go do this. But, you know, all those private people in some businesses, they have to go do this. It starts to look like some problems of the act itself, the language of the statute that Congress passed. But even more fundamentally than this, there's a question whether the federal government itself could do this at all. People have a right to decide what they put in their own bodies, to refuse medical treatment. And the Supreme Court has said that states can override that because they have the police power. They have the power to look and into your health and safety of the community and say, we need to protect this. And so they can override that, according to the Supreme Court. But the federal government doesn't have that power.
Well, and let's go to the states then, because even if this is just Joe Biden telling the blue states, the blue state governors and such, we want you to make this happen. So do it through your state authority. Don't the courts use language like the solution to any one of these issues has to be carefully tailored to fit a very specific set of circumstances? So I don't know, Mr. Watkins, I'm not a lawyer, but if you said, hey, there's a community somewhere and the water is just horribly contaminated with bacteria, that the state could come in and say, we are ordering you to put chlorine in the water. And the state would have the authority to do that. But they couldn't say you have to chlorinate all the water in the state. You have to chlorinate the water in the community where there's shown to be a grave danger to people drinking the water and maybe getting dysentery and dying. Would that be a good example of careful tailoring?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible if some state that really wasn't having much problems with COVID decided to require vaccinations, that could absolutely be raised even against the state. Now, the state isn't entirely immune from being challenged over these kind of things. It's just that the state has the power, if they're properly exercising that power, to be able to require vaccinations.
Okay, and in this case, it's not the state that's pushing it, it's the federal government. So the lawyers at the Bureau of, at the Labor Department and at OSHA must have said, hey, boss, we can't get away with this. It doesn't fit the criteria. So if they're saying that, is the plan from Biden simply to push the mandate out, knowing that it'll have some effect in the short run until it's challenged successfully in court and shot down?
Well, I mean, it isn't even OSHA lawyers that were saying that. It was the White House saying they didn't have the power to do this. That this was only, you know, states and localities, they were the ones that had to focus on this, not the White House. They didn't have the power to do this. Biden has changed his mind. Now, we don't know for certain why he's changed his mind. This could be like the CDC order. They just figure that, yeah, this is probably going to get challenged, and yeah, this is probably going to get overturned or stopped by the courts. But, you know, by the time that happens, there will be a lot of people that have gotten vaccinated, and that's what they really care about.
Except in some cases, Mr. Watkins, I'm talking to Devin Watkins from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. These people are calling me right now, and a lot of them are very well, they're very intelligent, they're very well educated, they're doctors, they're nurses, they're other kinds of professionals like cops and paramedics and firefighters. These are not the Trump dummies that the White House would have you believe all the vaccine hesitant are just a bunch of Trump dummies. These are well-trained people, and they're being told either do it and do it within the next couple of weeks before the middle of October, or you're out of a job. And you're not just out of a job here. You're out of a job everywhere in this state.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I personally have gotten vaccinated because I believe the benefits of vaccination are more than the risks of the vaccination. But
right.
That doesn't mean there's no risks. And, you know, each individual person's circumstance is a little bit different. Some people may be allergic to the vaccine. Some people may have already had COVID and therefore have natural immunity to COVID. There's a lot of variation among different people. And I think each person has to kind of look how they consider risks. They need to talk with their doctor. They need to figure out for themselves if it works for them. It really shouldn't be this one-size-fits-all solution that the federal government wants to push out now.
No, and Devin, I've been hearing from people who say, look, the VAERS system, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. So when somebody gets a vaccine, any kind of vaccine, and there's an adverse event, then they have to determine, was it the vaccine or something else? But they've looked at that and said, you've got at least 6,000 cases. And they say, oh, yeah, 6,000 out of a couple of hundred million. It's a low, you know, it's a low risk. And you say, well, maybe you call it a low risk, but Mr. Watkins, I like to compare it to my jar of 1,000 jelly beans, and only one of them is poisonous and will actually hurt you badly. Mr. Watkins, would you like to take one jelly bean out of the jar? You only have one chance in 1,000 of having something bad happen. Would you eat it?
Yeah, and the 6,000 you're talking about are just about COVID vaccines. There are hundreds of thousands of problems with vaccines in general. It isn't that this is a common occurrence. It isn't regularly. It is, most of these are very rare events, but they do happen.
And I'm one of those guys who's risk averse. I mean, when I owned a boat and Tina and I would go sailing occasionally, if the weather was crappy, I'd just say, I don't need to go out and sail in this kind of weather. You can get, you know, you're going to have an adverse event. And so I don't blame people who say, look, if I think my chances of getting COVID are low, and they are, and then my chance of getting it and having anything beyond mild symptoms are low, and they are, and my chance of actually dying appears to be, you know, 0.3% or 0.4% of 1%, I'm going to skip the risk of the vaccine. I'll take the risk of the disease instead. That's a legitimate choice, isn't it?
It is for some people, depending on, especially if they've had COVID in the past, they probably are naturally immune, which makes the vaccine not as useful. I mean, if you're already immune, you're having these risks of the vaccine without getting many additional benefits.
Do you have any inkling as to why they have so shoved out of the picture the question of natural immunity? Because it seems as though the medical community doesn't want to look at that at all.
Yeah, I it's really shocking when you look at the actual science behind it. I know a friend of mine works at a local public university, and he had to sue his university to force them so that they wouldn't be fired over this kind of stuff. I mean, because they refused to even consider natural immunity in any way. It's really amazing.
It is. And Mr. Watkins, it's always a pleasure. That's Devin Watkins, who's an attorney for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. I'll get to your phone calls and emails coming up in just a moment. If you want to jump in, naysayers, go to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And coming up in a moment, will Washington lawmakers shut down the scam of the state's new long-term care tax? I've got a few thoughts on that coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I get the most interesting email like this one from Holly, who says, Lars, I was just listening to your interview with Devin Watkins. That's the attorney I just talked to a moment ago. She says, I was just in France for 10 days where they're requiring a health pass to enter most places. You can get this pass by showing your vaccination record, a negative COVID test, or natural immunity by having COVID before. My in-laws live in Spain, and the Spanish government also considers natural immunity. I cannot understand why we do not. This makes no sense to me. Well, Holly, it makes no sense to me either. And I would love to be able to get a question in sideways to, say, the so-called epidemiologist of the state of Oregon, who's actually not trained as an epidemiologist, but the state gave him the title, so I guess it's legit, sort of, like anything else these days is legit, sort of. But I'd love to know, will you consider that? And the reason is, a few weeks ago, I mentioned to you a study that came out where they said that by last December, between 30% and 40% of Americans may have already had COVID, and you don't know about it. And you say, well, how could we not know about it? Well, because it was asymptomatic in a majority of cases. Now, that was the old COVID, Alpha. Now there's Delta and Mu and the rest of them. So the question is, does that natural immunity, or should it give you an exemption from getting the vaccine? And people are asking the question, and the powers that be, in many cases, are not willing to provide us with an answer. Let's go to Chad in Walla Walla. Hey, Chad, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Lars, you're a patriot, and we appreciate everything you do.
You're too kind.
And I think you need to be syndicated nationally someday. I just think you do the world a great thing.
Well, Chad, I want to get ahead of you on that one. I have a national syndicated show, and this year is 18 years. So I've got both.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was Northwest. I apologize.
No worries at all. This is one. It may be one of the reasons, Chad, that when people tell me, yeah, I spent the last 18 months on unemployment and I didn't want to go out and get one of the 10 million jobs that are available, I've been working two jobs most of my life. At some points in my life, I've worked three and four jobs. I think work is actually good for your soul, and it keeps you out of trouble.
Well, my parents both left when I was 15. I was working three jobs, and I was paying rent at the end of junior high and all through high school, so I've been there.
And I know that some people today, Chad, would say, well, that's abuse of poor Chad. He was abused. Well, I'll bet the lessons Chad learned by paying his own rent are probably lifelong, aren't they?
No, my dad wasn't around, and I encouraged my mom to start a new life. She'd been abused her entire life and had a horrible life, and I just wanted her to be happy. So I said, go. That was a choice I made, and I was emancipated at 15.
And you're proud of it today. Good for you.
Well, I think it makes you a better parent, but that's a whole other subject.
All right.
You know, the reason I'm calling, Lars, a couple of things. I want to talk about a couple of things where I'll try to be quick, and then I want your opinion on something.
All right.
So now
I'll give it to you.
I'll let you just do it. Sorry. Here
I'll
we go.
I'll give it to you.
You and I talked several years back about the Washington State Penitentiary or the Department of Corrections here in Washington.
Yeah.
I have a family member, and I don't, because of politics up there, I don't want to really say names, but I have
understood.
A family member at the Washington State Pen in Walla Walla, and he is getting ready to leave that facility, a 10-year veteran officer. I think he works pretty well with the inmates. He's a well-rounded person. So hard to find these days, someone that shows up every day and actually tries to take pride in what they do and do a good job. Kind of rare these days. Not impossible, but rare.
True.
He tells me that they are, as of right now, and there's no reason for him to exaggerate or lie, they are letting out any kind of offender for any kind of crime. And I mean the worst of the worst. I guess we'll just leave it at that. I hate saying the word child molester because it just makes me throw up in my throat a little bit. But murderers, child molesters, obviously drug crimes. So keep that in mind. My other subject is southern border. I know people are tired of hearing about it, but we have to face up to this issue. Sooner or later, the Democrats will have to deal with it in some form or another. My question to you is, Lars, with what I described going on at the penitentiary at the southern border, and now we have, it's not just Hispanic migrants coming across. We all know that.
No, it's OTM, other than Mexican as well.
For you,
a
Lars,
lot of them. Yeah.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. My question for you, Lars, is this, and then I'm just going to let you have your way with it, and I'll listen to it. So thanks for taking my call. Here's my question.
Well, no. What's the question?
If Biden makes it through his entire 4 years, if he does, what is our world going to look like? And I know you can't pin it down exactly, but I respect your show. I respect you as a human being. I respect your opinion. What are we going to look like in 4 years?
Okay, stay with me, Chad. And feel free to interject. I think energy in broad strokes, okay?
Yeah, I understand you're not going to get it 100%. But.
No. I mean just in the broad spectrum because I got a minute and a half to do it. So in broad strokes, energy will be hugely more expensive. And most of us think of that in terms of our electric bill or gas bill, but think of it in terms of your job. A lot of the jobs will cease to exist if energy gets expensive. Joe Biden is intent on making that happen. Taxes will go up by trillions of dollars. That has already been proposed, and it won't just be the rich people. There aren't enough rich people out there to make up the spending that Joe Biden wants to do. Illegal aliens will pour across our borders, and they're already proposing 8 million new green cards, so we will have a permanent underclass of cheap workers, and that will hurt all working Americans. Those are the broad strokes of what 4 years of Joe Biden will do to this great country. It is a real tragedy. Chad, thanks very, very much.